Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest this morning is Lisa Nelson. She is a registered dietitian and heart health nutritional expert. According to Lisa, unfortunately, she has been blessed with crummy genetics. She has a strong family history of heart disease, and her own cholesterol level has hovered around 200 since her early 20s. She had a grandmother that died from a heart attack at age 69, a grandfather that died of a heart attack a year before she was born, and another grandfather that had diabetes and was legally blind for as long as she could remember, and recently didn't recover from a quadruple bypass surgery. And her remaining grandmother lives with diabetes. Lisa received a double bachelor in nutrition and exercise science and went on to get her registration as a dietitian. After 5 years of ongoing education, she finally started working one-on-one with clients dealing with the same conditions as her grandparents. She started a private practice, e-nutrition services, in June of 2007. Since then, she has reached a much larger audience and is helping many more people achieve a healthy lifestyle and a new outlook in life. Lisa is here this morning to discuss her life's journey, her mission in educating everyone about heart health and in making a healthy difference in everyone's life. Good morning, Lisa. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Hi, Johnny.
Great. I would like to start off this morning by talking about your life's journey. Please tell us about your childhood life, your family, and the community you grew up in.
I think it'd be easiest if I work backwards from where I am now to
okay.
where I grew up. First of all, I'm the mother of two little girls, a four-year-old and a soon-to-be two-year-old, who are actually set up watching a movie right now, so hopefully we won't be bothered. I'm very fortunate, and I live in Yellowstone National Park. I actually met my husband at Kansas State University, which is in Manhattan, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to become a law enforcement officer for the National Park Service. And we've been lucky. We lived in South Dakota 5 years at Badlands National Park and Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in Yellowstone, which is in the northwest corner of Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm originally from a very small farming community in northwest Kansas. I actually grew up on a farm outside of town. And the town probably had a population of around 100 people,
mm-hmm.
so very small. I actually take my girls back every summer and help Dad on the farm still.
That's very interesting.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Very small high school, about 7 students in my graduating class. Actually, there were only 94 students in K through 12, and it was all in one building. So
wow.
Had to participate in all the activities, because if you didn't, the activity mm-hmm. wouldn't exist. So it was great. I enjoy going back because the pace of life in the country is much slower, and it's nice.
Were your parents, for them also, they grew up in the country like you?
My dad, I was actually raised in the home my dad was raised in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my mom was actually from a little bit larger town.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting because, my Italian foster mom lives in Poplar Bluff, Missouri. I mean, it's not quite close to Kansas, but I've been through Kansas. I've been through the prairies in Indiana and Illinois and so forth with my foster father during the summer vacations because for work stuff. And so I could somewhat relate to growing up in a small town, but enjoy the ambiance and the camaraderie, of being in a small group of people. Of course, Poplar Bluff, Missouri now, even though the population, it stays around 17,000, it's probably twice to three times that. that's one thing. It was very interesting that when you go to small towns, that they have not updated the population size, I guess,
Right.
And they didn't want anybody else to move in, I guess. So, but that was quite interesting, so I enjoyed that. Tell us a little bit about, I understand that you met your husband while going to college. What was it like when you were growing up, for example, that kind of led you into, to to be what you want it to be today, because that's what you talked about. You want it to begin today and then going walking backwards. And so obviously there are a lot of things that has happened while you were growing up in your family that sort of, you know, channel you towards who you are today.
Well, I can't pinpoint what it was, but mm-hmm. I've always been one of those people that's been very stingy with medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I feel I'm knocking on death's door, I prefer not to take medicine of any kind.
Uh-huh.
And that includes even like a simple aspirin to treat a headache. I've always felt that way.
Uh-huh.
I believe more in using food as medicine. Because
mm-hmm.
if you're fueling your body right, you can impact anything from a headache to the more serious conditions that people deal with. And it took me a long time to realize that I could pursue that line of thinking into a career.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually I got on track and realized probably my second year of college that I did want to pursue the nutrition side of things and that I'd be able to, you know, teach people how they can use food versus turning to medicine when they're, you know, to prevent feeling poorly.
Right. Now, were you guys, I didn't detect that. Were you guys were in a farming community? I mean, were your parents in a farming sort of a industry or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Dad farms, raising wheat, corn, cattle,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
traditional small farm.
Okay. So when you were growing up, obviously, did you have a lot of those home remedies, so to speak?
Somewhat, yes. Going to the doctor was a very rare occurrence. You pretty much just waited out sickness. Medicine
yeah.
wasn't kept in the house, things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
The more of your home-based remedies, like you said.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask that because, I mean, growing up in Malaysia with my mom in Malaysia, and we were in that transition because my grandparents were, you know, farmers. They were, in the rice fields of Malacca, Malaysia. But then my mom, when she got married, she moved into the city. But yet we still have, you know, back then, the city, you still have some areas in the back of your house that you could have your own live chicken and everything else.
Right.
So you can have a miniature farm, I guess. But having said that, people were heavy into, home remedies, basically. Natural medicine, so to speak, rather than, like you were talking about, taking Tylenol for every time when you have a little headache and stuff like that. So it's quite interesting. How about growing up with your brothers and sisters? I mean, were they following the same path? Did they get into farming, or is that something else that they...
I actually don't have any brothers. My dad only got four girls, so
uh-huh.
I have three younger sisters.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
And none of us married a farmer.
Oh. Well, is your dad still in farming?
Yeah, he still farms.
Fantastic.
Like I said, I go back each summer and actually help a few weeks, and the girls
wow.
go back, yeah.
Well, I bet the kids, the grandkids, will eventually enjoy that.
Yeah, I think it's a nice break for them.
Yeah.
Out in the country where they don't have to worry about much, run and play.
Yeah, because I remember I enjoyed doing that during the summers, away from college. And, of course, you know, not necessarily doing it full-time, but during the part-time, it becomes fun. And so I enjoyed that very much. Well, prior to starting your own company, you were working as a community health dietitian for about 5 years. What were some of the common health and behavioral issues you encountered among the general public?
Well, I'd say one of the biggest issues was confusion of not knowing
mm-hmm.
what to believe, because
mm-hmm.
there's so much information available in the media and on the web that you don't know who to trust or what's the real deal and what's not just a gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big hurdle for a lot of people. Another frequent problem was inaction, because a lot of people do know what they need to do, but for whatever reason they choose not to do it. And they need to have that motivation to start and stick with it, and then the support too, that support they can surround themselves with. So that was another hurdle. And actually in community health,
mm-hmm.
I dealt a lot with low-income families.
Right.
So we had to deal with finances and how to prepare nutritious meals on a budget.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Actually,
now, do you feel that, when you do that, when you work with in a community situation, I mean, I know you were in the Dakotas, and how was that transfer as far as, you know, the educational level of the general public themselves? And what I'm saying here is that people tend to be skeptical about things that they don't know or they lack the information of, do you find that that is one of the greatest deterrent for people to really, you know, step up to the plate, so to speak, you know, like, hey, there's something wrong with me, I need to do something?
Well, not necessarily, because we took things pretty much back to the basics. Like if you're dealing with low income and finances, things like instead of buying your beans already canned, making the beans from scratch, boiling them on the stove, small steps like that. Now, there is the issue of, in South Dakota, there's an Indian reservation, so we did deal a lot with Native Americans, and there's some different traditions there that you have to work around. But for the most part, not a lot of skepticism, no.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful, because you know, because one of the things that that I've encountered in talking to some nutritionists, or for that matter, when it comes to health issues, the elderly was a little bit sort of skeptical in terms of like, wait a minute, you know, I don't know this, so I'm still a little bit apprehensive of participating, I guess, so to speak.
Yes, you know, more of what I saw is people that think it doesn't apply to them. They're not going to get sick. They don't need to worry about this. So it goes in one ear and out the other.
Okay. Okay. Well, from that experience that you encountered, how has that helped you in preparing you in running your own company?
Well, I had some good experience teaching classes and counseling clients in that traditional office setting. So that really helped solidify just my core nutrition knowledge and counseling skills so that I could move forward and build on that. And then as far as running a business, it didn't help at all. that was a huge learning curve for me when I started my private practice. I didn't realize at the time what I was taking on, and if I had known, I probably would have been too overwhelmed to start. So it's best I didn't.
Well, I mean, it's something that, you know, you're never going to be fully prepared until you actually get into it. So but congratulations though, because you'd be surprised. I think once you get in and once you kind of get settled down, then it's a wonderful feeling to have your own business and you know, and just grow from that. Do want to come back real quick to the you were dealing with some Native Americans and so forth. Were you ever asked to have you picked up any things about some local remedies that you find that is interesting that could be used in treating some of the issues that you are dealing with right now?
Oh, you know, you're catching me off guard with that one. It's been 5 years, and I cannot think of anything off the top of my head.
Oh, okay. No problem. I mean, it's just I'm just wondering, because sometimes, you know, when you we talk some, you know, of course, the normal deal, you know, we talk about chicken soup, you know, this and that, you know, remedy for certain things. So it was kind of interesting, because I know there's got to be a lot of home, you know, remedies, you know, to do a lot of things.
Yeah, you're right. When I was working with Native Americans, it was a lot dealing with infant care, and I was doing a lot of teaching lactation classes and things like that.
Oh,
and
okay.
I can't think of anything to share with you that would be useful right now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. What are some of the things that that we can do every day now, you know, in terms of keeping track of our health and what we do, and to help us down the road to make sure that we don't encounter the things that I guess just about everyone in the United States is exposed to?
The first step is to really become aware of what you're eating, because so many people go through the day in a hurry and they eat without thinking. So I'd like to tell people about a food journal, because it's really a good tool to use. And it doesn't have to be complicated. It's just a simple record of everything that goes into your mouth, including drinks, snacks, and meals. And I'm not talking about counting calories, because calorie counting, that can become very tedious and more of a diet approach.
Right.
The purpose with a food journal is to become aware of how you're treating your body with food. You know, are your choices high in fruits and veggies and low-fat dairy, or are you filling up on sodas and chips and the occasional well-balanced meal? And there's, I don't know, as you know, a lot of the population is dealing with being overweight and obese now.
Right, right.
There's actually a study they did that showed that people who kept a food journal were lost twice as much weight as people that do not.
Wow. How long do you have to keep this journal?
Well, it can be different for everybody. You can actually, I keep a food journal off and on. And all you need to do is when you feel you're slacking, when I feel like I'm slacking or need to refocus, I'll start back up again.
Right.
And I'll do it for a few months, and then I may stop. So it all depends on you and how much you need to be focused on what you're eating. How
and
long are you able to stay on track?
The food journal is basically just recording what you eat rather than worrying about how many calories, because then it gets too tedious. So you're just looking, hey, you know, if I have this, I have that, just record it down to kind of put it in front of your face that, you know, have you kind of keep track of how many times you eat the food that you eat, and
right.
and then just be mindful of it, I presume.
Yeah, all you need to do is grab a notebook and write down the food you eat or the whatever you drink, the amount, the time, and the reason why you ate it.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, you know, were you physically hungry? Was it simply habit and it was time to eat? Or were you responding to, like, an emotion or stress? So that way you're aware of, it's especially important when it comes to, like, nighttime eating, because a lot of people sit in front of the TV and eat out of habit.
Right.
And if you have to write it down and write down the reason why, you can start to see what you're doing and start to make changes.
I know this much. I don't, you know, necessarily write down exactly what I eat, but I am conscious of what I eat. In other words, I used to tell, a friend of mine used to ask me, you know, like, how do you keep track of what you eat? Well, let me put it this way. If I eat heavy today, then I'll eat light next couple of days. I'm thinking about law of averaging, whether it works or, I mean, whether it is scientific or not, but it's Johnny's way of keeping up the food journal, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
I
figure it balances out in the course of 3-4 days that, you know, okay, it's all right, you know, it will work out. Please tell us some of the success stories that you have gotten from your clients by using this technique.
Yeah, I've actually got one individual, a middle-aged man that is actually facing open heart surgery coming up, and he has been making tremendous progress. We started working together in July, and he's been keeping track of what he eats, and he actually submits it to me so I can give him some feedback too.
Wow.
But he's lost just over 20 pounds in the last couple months.
Wow, that's good.
He's actually due to have surgery in January and is hoping to lose another 15, so we're really getting detailed with him on where to make little changes, but it's been a big help.
How does your client get you in the sense of, you know, like, are these doctor's referrals, or are these something that, you know, like, hey, I'm about to, this, for example, and the reason I brought this up, because this gentleman obviously right here, I wouldn't say obese or anything like that, but he did lose 20 pounds, but the fact that now he's going through a surgery and everything else, how do they find you, or do you find them? You know, is there a referral deal that, you know, that you guys work out, like, you know, hey, you got to be in shape first before you sit for your surgery to ensure that you have successful surgery? How does that work?
Well, I do have a couple doctors that refer to me, but this particular individual was just found me online, and he said he actually took a gamble when he signed up. He had his wife looking over his shoulder telling him he was crazy, that he was losing his money. But he did it anyway, and he's quite happy he did, because he's seen some good success. But
right.
This particular case was just a fluke incident where he came across me.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic.
I do have physicians that make referrals.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, too, I get, because I publish a newsletter online, so a lot of them are people who have known me for months through that.
Right. Now, how does, at what point in one's life would they, I guess, you know, like for me, for example, I'm just nonchalantly, you know, keep track of what I eat, sometimes I don't, or whatever you want to call it. And then at what point in a person's life, or when you look at it right now, those who are listening, hey, I think I need to be a little bit more serious about this, you know, like, it's like they say, you know, like, you. I mean, the latest study, if I'm not mistaken, they say, like, sometimes even when you're 10 pounds over, you need to start considering about shedding some pounds here. Don't wait till you're about 50 pounds before you look at it. So at what point does, you know, someone's physiological makeup here, that a red flag or a yellow flag, an orange flag, you know, caution flag needs to come up?
Well, the earlier you catch it, the easier it is going to be to get back to where you want to be. But I think the key is people need to tune in to how they're feeling. You know, what's their body telling them? Are they able to do the activities they want to do, or are they too tired? Are they not physically able? You know, that's the time to decide I should take some action now, versus to hear my doctor tell me, hey, you need to go on medication because of this, this, and this.
And you have that also, right? I mean, you have that where sort of like a little checklist, I guess.
Can you rephrase? What do you mean?
I mean, like a little checklist, like, hey, you know, I'm not feeling so good right now, or I'm like at this stage, then I need to start take it seriously, I guess. That's what I meant. I mean, in the sense of, you know, like, okay, I'm like 10 pounds overweight or 15 pounds. It's never too late or too soon to...
Right, it's never too soon, that's for sure. It can it can get late in the game to decide to make changes, and it can be very difficult if you're at a place where, like, let me go back to this individual. His condition puts him in a place where he cannot be physically active. If he is, it makes his situation worse.
Right.
So
right.
If you wait until you're in a position like that, it makes it very difficult to get back to where you need to be because you're limited on what you can do.
Right.
So,
and that, for him, that will be considered like, you know, he's reached the red flag versus the yellow flag or the orange flag before he did
that's
something.
That's the end of the road. There's no choice left, no time left, really.
Right. Well, I've read something about sleep, how that, you know, all ties into our, you know, in some ways, diet or our body process and all that. Tell me about how sleep correlates to all this, keeping up with journals as well as, you know, in our diet and everything else.
Yeah, too little sleep has an effect on different hormones that affect your appetite, stress, and can cause weight gain. And I actually, the three hormones are actually leptin, ghrelin, and cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when you don't get enough sleep? Well, the hormone ghrelin, it's released by your stomach, and it causes an increase in appetite. And it tells your brain when you're hungry. And on the opposite side, you have leptin that's produced by your fat cells, and it causes your appetite to decrease. And when you don't get enough sleep, your ghrelin levels increase and your leptin levels decrease. So that means you feel the urge to eat more when you do not get enough sleep. So not only does sleep allow you to have more energy and to think more coherently, when it comes to food, it can affect your hunger also. So...
I didn't realize that. It's very, very interesting because I know that for myself, and you're right, though. I mean, I'm looking back because I remember when I right now, especially at this time of the year for me, I'm having like 5 hours of sleep. So I tend to eat a little bit more. I didn't realize that. But I mean, I do feel hungry, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
a,
not like, yeah.
A physical reason that happens.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. What's a good... hours of sleep that one needs to have that balance.
You want to shoot for 7 to 9 hours of sleep.
Oh, that's a lot of time, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of important time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know the last couple of months I have gotten up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I remember one time specifically at 3:30 in the morning, and I end up cooking something, you know, something light, but I end up cooking something to eat, and I was watching one of those infomercials at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, because... my stomach was growling. And
you know,
it's just weird.
And I also heard, I haven't looked into the science behind this, but I heard that every hour of sleep you get before midnight is worth more than the hours of sleep you get after it. So it's better to go to bed early and wake up early versus going to bed late.
Oh, no, this is going to bed at about 12:30, 1 o'clock to eat something.
You're not treating your body right.
No, not at all. I mean, I just have too many things on my mind. Let me put it out. You know, it's like you have so much to do and not having enough time to do it. And so your brain don't shut down, and so you twist and turn, and then before you know it, and you're right, because I didn't even realize that then I all of a sudden right now feel hungry. My stomach starts making sound. And then I feel like, well, you can't sleep when you're hungry, you know.
Yeah, and you don't sleep, so you're feeling hungry, so you tend to snack more or try to get an energy boost from something sugary, that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about snacks. I mean, what are balanced snacks and what are basically snacks that are very harmful to you?
Well, when it comes to snacks, what's important is making sure that you have the right balance of carbs, fat, and protein, because fat and protein slow down the breakdown of carbohydrates. And carbohydrates cause this rise in blood sugar and then this drop in this insulin spike that causes, and when your insulin spikes, that can cause you to feel sluggish and tired during the day.
Yeah.
So when you're picking snacks, you want to make sure you have a balance of carbohydrates with protein. So examples of carbs could be whole grain crackers, dried fruit, pretzels, fresh fruit. And you'd want to balance those out with protein, like a glass of skim milk or yogurt, cheese. Handful of nuts. eat peanut butter on a slice of toast. That'd be a good snack. You're balancing the protein with the carb.
You know, the snacks that you get from the gym, they're nasty to me. I don't find anything that's really great, you know, tasting at all, so I kind of stayed away from that. I have to say that I don't snack very well because I do eat my ice creams. I do eat my chocolate-covered almonds.
But you just need to do little switches like frozen yogurt with the little strawberries,
uh-huh.
nuts.
Uh-huh. But I think, and then, of course, on the other hand, you know, do you eat it in excess? That's
right.
The other thing, yeah.
Portion control is a big issue.
Right, right. So I think that's the key to everything, because if you do something too much, then obviously you're going to have a little kickback here, you know, that's going to affect you along the line. But I do drink a lot of water, though. What's your take on that?
Water is very important. Many times if people don't drink enough water, they feel hungry when it's actually thirst in disguise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So people just need little incentives to drink more water throughout the day. And if you have to, you know, ladies can buy pretty little water bottles they can cart around with you. Or if you need
right.
to, just keep a pitcher of cold water in the refrigerator so it's quick and easy to refill your glass. There's actually, if you want specific reasons of what water does, it
mm-hmm.
helps the fiber swell in your stomach, so it increases your feeling of fullness, so you're feeling more satisfied after meals.
Mm-hmm.
Actually helps promote decreased fat storage,
mm-hmm.
and it helps rinse the sodium from your system. And sodium can cause water retention,
mm-hmm.
which can cause the scale to read a higher number than you might like. And also, for people with high blood pressure, you know, cleansing your system of sodium can help control your blood pressure levels. So lots of water is important, ideally 8 to 10 glasses a day. And the more active you are, 8 to 10 8-ounce glasses a day, if you are active, the more water you need, because you need to stay hydrated to keep
right.
you know, cleanse your kidneys and help promote weight loss, whatever your health goal is.
Now, you have a lot, I mean, for lack of a better term here, designer water that's out there right now, with vitamins, with this, with that.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, it's like when I go there, it's like I end up still getting the plain old purified water, or what they call it, you know, as long as it's water other than the vitamin plus. Now, are there any, can you give us a little bit more information about that?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the designer waters, like the vitamin
mm-hmm.
water and things like that. I don't
mm-hmm.
use them myself, so I don't know all the details about them. I don't recommend them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're somebody that doesn't like the taste of plain water, you can go with flavored waters, but the key
mm-hmm.
is to look at the back of the bottle and make sure those flavored waters have no sugar added to them. Make sure the calories are zero and it's just
mm-hmm.
flavoring that was added.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal Light's another good option if you like flavor but don't want any calories. I actually, Benefiber is makes a powder that you can add to water, and it adds flavor and fiber. So if
mm-hmm.
you're somebody that struggles to get enough fiber into the day, that's an option. It's a little stick pack, they call it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's great, though, because I see so many of people that go and they buy different water, you know, designer water, which I'm not opposed to all that, but then again, like you were saying, you know, when it's all said and done, I'm confused and I just end up just drinking basic water. And of course, recently, you know, they say, well, the water that you buy in the bottle is no better than the tap water in the
exactly.
house, you know.
Yeah.
And that's another headache I'm dealing with. You know, it's like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to buy good water. So it's just, you know, it's just a different take, you know, as far as that goes. Well, let's talk about weight loss. I mean, the health function.
Can I jump in with one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
The water that comes out of your tap, even hard water, is full of minerals that are important. So going with your purified water bottle isn't always the best choice, and
mm-hmm.
it's more expensive versus just getting the water from your tap if you have a good tap supply of water.
That's interesting, and I've just got someone on the chat line that says that this is from Carla Gree Presents, and she just said that Dr. Oz was just talking about how the hidden dangers of water, whether it's drinking or otherwise, waters that we cook and actually we shower with, that there are a lot of things that we don't even realize are in there that's affecting us in some ways. Pretty, pretty interesting information. Let's talk about weight loss. You know, that's always been a think about, to me, I don't know at what point weight loss is healthy, because you can lose weight, which is just fluid weight, and still be out of shape, versus you can be gaining weight and yet be in shape. So can you shed some light for us on that?
Well, one thing to consider is, like, you know how popular all the high-protein diets have been lately, and mm-hmm. how bad carbs are being portrayed. One thing that really happens when you go on the – let me back up. Carbohydrates, when you eat them, they store more water than protein. So when you mm-hmm. cut them out of your diet, you quickly lose water weight, which mm-hmm. is a lot of what people see, those quick results when they switch from eating carbohydrates to eliminating them.
Right.
They're
right.
losing water that's stored. They're not losing fat stores. So that's something important to keep in mind, because when you want to lose weight, you want to lose the fat. You know, water doesn't really do you any good, because you start to add carbs back into your diet, you're going to gain the weight right back.
What are some of the fun ways to do, you know, what you just talked about, you know, weight loss and increasing, you know, intake of water versus, you know, and then losing fat, obviously, in this situation from a health perspective?
Well, fun ways. I don't know about fun ways. But I always encourage, you know, take it one step at a time. Don't try to make these big drastic changes. Pick, you know, look at one meal and what can you do with that one meal to make it a healthier choice for you. And then after you feel comfortable with that change, move on to a second change. Like if you're a big soda drinker,
mm-hmm.
try to cut back to what, you know, if you're drinking six a day, cans a day, you know, try cutting back to two. That'll be pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you get back to two, you know, go further. Try to go every other day with it. So, you know, one step at a time. Make small changes, because if you try to change all your habits and everything you do at once, you're just setting yourself up for failure.
You're very right about, you know, that soda deal. This was years ago, and I was in the do is, each restaurant that I go, I will have either iced tea or a glass of Coke. And I would not drink everything, you know, maybe just about a quarter or maybe half or so, but I was sipping on it all the time. And in the course of, and I actually had a dietitian I was working with when I started out working out at this particular health club. And before you know it, I was actually drinking 1,000 calories a day, at least.
And
I was drinking, you know, in terms of when you talk about calories, I was actually drinking at least 1,000 calories a day, just in this little, you know, Coke here.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and then I made up my mind that, you know, I'd rather eat, you know, a piece of steak than drinking.
What's bad is liquid calories don't affect your appetite. Like if you were to eat 1,000 calories of food, you'd feel full. But when you drink that many calories in liquid, you're still so hungry.
Right, and so it was sort of a weird way. I mean, it was like, wow, I didn't even realize that. So, and that comes back again to what you talked about from the very beginning, keeping a food journal of what you were doing, because I was, you know, this is something that you do nonchalant, you don't think about it, but then you just end up doing it. So it's just a little bit different. Well, this month is, of course, Cancer Awareness Month, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I want us to talk about your perspective about the advantages of fruits and vegetables and so forth that we can take in steps in preventing cancer, and perhaps even in this case, you know, treatment of cancer.
Well, I'm going to try to explain how cancer begins, very elementary explanation. So there's an event that would produce free radicals, and this could be excess stress, poor diet, infection, inflammation. There's numerous situations that could cause free radical production increase in your body.
Hmm.
And these free radicals are the bad guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They circulate throughout the body, and they steal from other cells. And they're actually stealing electrons, and that leads to cell damage. And it's just one process that leads to cell mutation and can eventually lead to cancer. So to prevent the cell damage or the oxidation that's going on by these free radicals, you want a diet that's high in antioxidants, because antioxidants protect against the cells being damaged by free radicals.
Hmm, okay.
the damage leads to oxidative stress, which is then linked with cancer, aging, atherosclerosis, which is the hardening of your arteries, and various other conditions. But the best source of antioxidants is going to be your fruits and vegetables, and the more you eat every day, the better. Mm-hmm. The current recommendation is getting 5 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, depending on your age, sex, gender, and how active you are.
Yeah.
But there's recent studies that show even higher levels are needed, 9 to 13 servings a day. So I recommend going back to that food journal and look at what you're doing now. How many fruits and veggies are you eating every day right now? And then brainstorm ways you can increase your intake. And I recommend starting by eating a fruit or vegetable, at least one with every meal and snack. That's a good way to get started increasing your intake. And then work your way up.
How about the people that don't like to eat fruits and vegetables, but can they drink? You know, nowadays you have this blender thing that you can do, and you blend just about everything, and then just sort of, you know, one big gulp, you know, just kind of take it in. Does that work the same way, too?
Well, you can do fruit smoothies and vegetable juices and things like that. Those do work, too. They provide the antioxidants and phytonutrients. They're not as good as the whole fruit and veggie. That'd be my first choice because you're getting the fiber also with the whole fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
But the juices and the shakes and things like that are an option.
Oh,
I actually wanted to talk
about
that because there's a lot of supplements on the market that are intended to boost antioxidant levels. But you need to be really smart when you look at the different supplements because some are going to be a waste of money. And I'll share the four things I look for when I'm evaluating the supplements. The first is you want to look at the research, and you want to make sure it's independent, and that means that the company selling the product is not the one that conducted the research. And then the second would be double-blind, placebo-controlled studies, and all that means is that neither the patient nor the doctor knew if they were taking a supplement or a sugar pill, because that's going to provide more reliable results. The third thing I look for is you want the research to show results. If the product is claiming that it raises antioxidant levels, then the research needs to back that up. They need to show that what's in the supplement is bioavailable, meaning that it's actually getting into the bloodstream. And then the fourth thing you want to look for is, was it published in a peer-reviewed journal? You know, a respected journal like the Journal of the American College of Cardiology or the Journal of Human Nutrition. So if you find a supplement and it can meet all of those four guidelines, then it's possibly a good choice. But there's a lot out there that don't have the science to back them up.
Now, I mean, when you look at it, when you go to the shelves, then you have liquid gels, you have powder, you have pills, you have all kinds of antioxidants. I mean, for example, green tea. You find it in green tea itself, green tea smoothies, green tea, just about everything. Does all these products work from a different application perspective?
Oh, you're talking like, does the gel work just as well as the tea itself?
Yeah.
It's going to depend on each different thing. It's going to depend on, like, did the person that produced that gel include the necessary antioxidant or whatever in its product, or did they filter that out during the processing? So it's more difficult to say. You have to look at each thing individually.
Do you have any recommendations that you recommend to your clients that you can share with us? I mean, things that you personally, you know, have taken as well as you've seen successes from your client's perspective. Perhaps you can share that with our listeners this morning.
I do have a supplement that I take myself and recommend, but I think I'd prefer if somebody's interested, they can get in touch with me and we can talk about it further.
Sure. That'll be fine. How about nutrition for children?
Oh, sure. I know you said a lot of your listeners are mothers or women with young children. A big problem parents face when it comes to feeding kids is picky eating. And a lot of times moms find themselves short order cooking and preparing, you know, three different foods for one meal. And there's actually steps they can take to change how their kids eat. And the first is, you know, very basic. Sit down as a family for meals. Because kids learn and depend on their parents to show them how to eat. You know, they watch the food you eat, and that affects their choices. And family meals, sitting down at the table, is where they all begin to learn this. The second would be to phase out the short-order cooking. You want to prepare one meal, and your child eats it or they do not. And I know a lot of people listening would think their child's not going to touch anything and they're going to go hungry. But as you start the transition, you can put one food on the table that you know your child likes, and they can eat as much of that as they want, but they only have what you've served to pick from versus you cooking up different meals for them. And that actually moves us to the third, is you don't want to pressure your child or judge them at mealtime. You know, I know it's hard, but you really want to zip your lips, and you don't want to make comments about how yummy a food is or try to convince them to take a bite. All you want to do is serve the food, sit down and eat, and maybe make some conversation, you know, in doing your best not to comment on whether they're eating or not. And this includes even if your child surprises you and takes a bite, you don't want to praise them. Just keep your mouth shut. Because eating needs to become their responsibility, not yours. It's your job to serve the well-balanced meal, and snacks at regular times, it's their job to decide to eat it or not. But it's important to remember that the problem's not corrected overnight.
Are there any fun way of approaching this?
A fun way? When it comes to mealtime, it gets to be such a battle between parents and kids, it's really unpleasant. But it's best just to take the battle out of it by letting it be your child's responsibility and not yours.
Yeah.
I know that's hard for moms to do because you want your kids to eat well.
Right.
But in the long run, it makes for a much smoother mealtimes.
Right.
You know, you can make fun meals. You know, you can do snacks that are fun, like pretzel sticks that kids can dip in cheese and then go fishing for goldfish crackers, things like that.
Right.
So they're getting a nutritious snack, but you just serve it and they can decide whether to eat it or not. And I know Go ahead.
That's interesting, you know, because I you know, for me when I was growing up, you know, I won the battle because I don't eat, I don't like to eat vegetables. So finally my mom gave up on me. And everybody else ate, you know, with plenty of, you know, especially being, I guess, Chinese. I mean, and I give this an example to people. And, you know, like, say, if you do a stir fry where you have meats and, you know, veggies and stuff like that. So I end up getting all the meat, and everybody else get very little meat with all the bunch of vegetables, you know. So I'm actually helping them to stay healthy.
I remember as a kid, I was a terribly picky eater, and I'd have to miss recess a lot during school because I wouldn't eat my lunch. And I remember thinking that if they'd just leave me alone and stop harping on me, I just might try it. But because they wanted me to, I wasn't going to touch it.
You're being defiant, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So it backfires.
Right. So it's funny because I, you know, just sort of, and then fortunately for me now, of course, I don't preach this because I think that I've been very thankful that my body adjusted to it, you know, because we are in a closed system here, so your body sort of adjusts to whatever your intake is, so to speak. And so I've been very fortunate that. But, of course, I don't drink, I don't smoke, and so I snack once in a while. You know, everybody's got that sinful side of, I guess, with chocolates and stuff like that. But overall, I drink water, and so it's different. I can't recommend that to anybody else, but, you know, personally it works for me.
Yeah, I do want moms that are listening to know, you know, changes aren't going to happen overnight. The younger a child is, such as like a one-year-old that's a picky eater, they can show improvements in a few weeks. But if you have a 12-year-old that's very picky, it could take months before their eating starts to change.
Right.
Yeah, and I know we're talking about food, but it's really a matter of trust when it comes to this. If you make positive changes, your child's going to be skeptical at first until you show them that you're sticking with the changes, and then they'll gradually start to accept them.
You know, one of the challenges that someone had brought up to me is to say, okay, you don't have any kids right now, but when you do, how are you going to make the kids eat something you're not going to eat?
Exactly. They're watching you.
And I said, well, I'll cross the bridge when I get there. You know, I said, look, I am the law here.
I have to work on my husband because he doesn't like peas, and when I serve them, uh-huh. you know, I just make sure he keeps his mouth shut. No bad comments about the peas.
Oh, okay, okay.
Let them decide.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. But it's just that these are the things that sometimes we take for granted. You know, it's like, hey, you know, you have to eat because I say so, and if they challenged you, and, you know, it's like, okay, I don't know, I got to figure that out on what to do. Anyway, Halloween is coming up around the corner.
Can I back up? I'd like to make one referral.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
There's mm-hmm. a dietitian that's more of an expert in child feeding than I am,
mm-hmm.
and her name
mm-hmm.
is Ellen Satter, and she's wrote a number of books, but if there were one was one book I'd recommend, it's called Child of Mine, Feeding with Love and Good Sense, and it's a really easy read, and she gives good tips on how to feed your kids nutritiously and deal with some of those feeding issues.
Child of Mine.
Child of Mine.
Okay. And the author again?
Ellen Satter.
Okay. Wonderful. That certainly will help lots of families out there with regards to communication and eating communication with the kids, obviously. But that's great. That's a wonderful tip. Halloween, round the corner. Any advice on for us candy lovers?
Sure. One step would be, just purchase the amount of candy you think you're going to need to hand out. That way there's less candy left over for you. another would be if you have young children, you could limit
mm-hmm.
the number of houses you go trick-or-treating to, because the fewer homes, the fewer candy you bring home. And my favorite is to share the wealth. Take
mm-hmm.
all that excess candy and share it with coworkers and things
mm-hmm.
like that. Get it
mm-hmm.
out of your house.
This is a silly question. Are there any good candy versus bad candy?
Yeah. If you wanted to hand things out, you could always give out nickels or dimes, things like that, versus candy. Or you could do like some of those 100% gummy juice snacks for the really
mm-hmm.
little kids and things like that to get away mm-hmm. from just the candy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, are you talking about, like, gummy bears? I mean, are they better than, say,
the
chocolate itself?
No, I'm not talking about the gummy bear candies, but, like, the fruit snacks are actually made from 100% juice.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, like, gummy bears or Starburst, some of those candies, you know, they're going to lead to more dental problems because of how sticky they are and how long they stay on the kids' teeth.
Right.
So they're not
right.
necessarily a better choice.
Hey, by the way, I mean, you got this down pat for all your kids? I mean, for your two kids? I mean, you know, you got this regimen. You are preaching this now. Don't forget that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I follow what I preach when it comes to candy.
And including your husband, too, see? So, you know, like, okay.
He has the biggest sweet tooth in the house, so.
And how about the upcoming holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas? Any particular food that we need to watch out for?
There's not necessarily a particular food, but some tips when it comes to the holiday parties is to be sure that you don't go to the party hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Eat something small in advance so you're not starving with this buffet of rich foods in front of you.
Yeah.
And then second would be, don't socialize around the buffet line or the kitchen table where there's
mm-hmm.
all the food. You know, take your family or friends to a different room where there's less temptation. Because,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, the weight gain around the holidays isn't as high as you might think. It's usually at 1 to 2 pounds a year that
mm-hmm.
people gain. But the problem is that they don't lose the weight. And then year
mm-hmm.
after year, the pounds creep up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm actually doing a holiday call next month with another dietitian called 10 Secrets to Surviving
mm-hmm.
the Holidays Without Gaining Weight.
Yeah.
And so that's an option if people would like more tips. We'll be discussing it in more detail.
That's wonderful. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Yeah, the best way would be to go to a website, and I'll give the web address.
Mm-hmm.
It's www.hearthealthwithlisa.com, and that's HEARTHEALTHWITHLISA, hearthealthwithlisa.com. And at the site, they can sign up for the Heart of Health, which is where I give free tips that to help you change how you eat to lower cholesterol, blood pressure, and lose weight. And also, when they sign up, they get a free report called Stop Wasting Money, Take Control of Your Health.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an ebook that's intended to help them make new behaviors into habits, because it's one thing to know what you should be doing, but it's easier said than done. And the ebook is a great place. It walks you through the steps you need to put in place to successfully change your habits. So if they go to Heart Health with Lisa, they can sign up for that.
Okay. Can you repeat that website again?
Sure. It's www.hearthealthwithlisa.com.
Okay. Great. I mean, you're very passionate about what you're doing, and I wish you lots of success with regards to that, because I know you've made a lot of difference in a lot of people's lives, and that's one thing I've got you on this morning, because I feel like when someone's passionate as you are, you will make a positive difference. And whenever it's the motivation that you present this morning that makes a big difference. I mean, it's certainly for me, it makes me start to think about the things that I'm eating and how else can I what else can I do and how else can I approach my eating habits. And I've always told people that I would never eat vegetables. And I'm slowly but surely, nibbling on some, but not all.
Right.
What can we expect from you in 2010?
Actually, in the coming year, I'm going to stay focused on my current interests, which include helping individuals change how they eat to be heart healthy and lose weight. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to continue doing that through the Heart of Health and my virtual coaching programs. And next year, I'm also going to be expanding a weight loss support group called New You. Your weight, your health, your choice.
That sounds very interesting. Now, is this locally, I guess, in some ways? Obviously, you're working more one-on-one, in person with the people that are very close to you, but nationwide, can people still participate in this?
I actually work with people even around the world, so you don't have to live
Fantastic.
Locally. I do see people face-to-face, but I have virtual programs where you can be located anywhere.
That's fantastic. That's really good. Any last-minute tips as far as, what can we expect, as far as, we talk about holidays, and I know we talk about, eat whatever you want, actually, but be mindful and filling yourself up ahead of time and so forth. Are there anything in terms of actual food that's not necessarily healthy to eat? I guess in drinking, we didn't really talk a lot about drinking. How does drinking affect your nutrition?
Well, there are a lot of calories, like in those mixed drinks or even eggnog itself. I'm not sure. I think it's a little over 300 calories in a little 6 or 8 ounce glass of eggnog. So you need to be really careful about your liquid calories when the holidays are coming. And, just plan ahead on how much you're going to let yourself drink, because it's okay to have some, just don't go overboard. Don't let one glass lead to 5 glasses. Plan, okay, I'm going to enjoy a glass of wine with my dinner. I'm not going to have it in between. Have a plan, game plan in place, and then stick with it when you go to the party or the holiday gathering.
Do you have, I know there's some other things that you have available on your website for download to help people. Do you have anything that helps them to sort of, be mindful right off the bat right now about things that they should or shouldn't do, or be mindful right off the bat before going into the holiday season that's available on your website?
I didn't say this, but I put together a food journal template for your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
If they'd like to get that, they can get that on my website.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lisanelsonrd.com /Johnny. And they can go there and get a food journal template, because that is really – I know I'm stressing that a lot, but that's really the first place to start, is to be aware of what you're eating now before you can start making changes.
Okay.
So lisanelsonrd.com/johnny.html, and they can get that food journal template. And then my blog, when they go to the website, is also a good place to get for just information on a variety of topics to be heart healthy and lose weight.
That's wonderful, because what I'll do is that I didn't realize you have that specially made. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that and email it out and also put it on my blog and our site to talk about, this is something, a first step that everyone could do just to, you have something in front of you, sort of being mindful, the first step to have a little food journal and just sort of writing down of what your intake is and everything else. But that's great. That's wonderful. I appreciate that very, very much. Lisa, we're coming close to the end of the show. As for all guests that I have on this show, do you have a recipe for living would you like to share with our listeners this morning?
Sure. My recipe for living would be small changes equal permanent results.
And small changes. That sounds really good.
Yeah. It means taking it one step at a time, because like I said, if you try to do too much, you're just looking at failure. So pick one change and focus on it, and then move forward from there.
Can you repeat that, please?
Sure. Small changes equal permanent results.
Equal permanent results. That's true. There's no shock and awe and all that kind of stuff, because you want it to be rooted. And so you just make small changes at a time, and then it will eventually just solidify itself. That's fantastic. And what are you doing this holiday season?
Thanksgiving. I'm actually staying here with my family, and we're going to do our own little home Thanksgiving dinner. And then for Christmas, we're going to be traveling back to Kansas. We do a lap of the state to cover all of our family in the state.
Fantastic. That sounds wonderful. And thank you again for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. You're welcome. Welcome very, very much, joining us. And I think what you have done certainly put us on the right track as far as going into the holiday season, and also being mindful about, health is not actually sort of a part-time deal. It has to have our personal full-time attention to it, not to a point of being extremely strict, but certainly we've got to be mindful about what we take in every day. And your food journal certainly is the first step in the right direction of us just being mindful of what we take in. So I appreciate that very, very much. To all our listeners this morning, thank you for being with us. And please join me next Tuesday morning for a special Halloween show. My guest will be Sandra Lawson. She's an animal communicator. Sandra is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin at Superior with a double major in psychology and education. She's also a graduate of Gateway College in Florissant, Missouri. She taught elementary school in Wisconsin, Germany, and California. She was a psychology instructor at both Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College and San Diego Community College. Sandra is a life coach, an angel therapy practitioner, and a certified animal communicator. We will be discussing her life's journey, Halloween, of course, and having the opportunity to do some animal communications live on the air. So if you guys are really into communicating with your animals that have passed on, this is the show to call in and to participate, and I believe you will have lots of fun. For additional information about this show with Lisa Nelson, registered dietitian, and future shows, and also for my weekly recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter, From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. Thank you for listening, and have a great week. Lisa, thank you again, and have a wonderful day.
Same to you, Johnny.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.